Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel. To our regular show, not our panel discussion. We finished that. We're very happy to welcome Kim Reed to the program this morning. We're going to look at her nearly two decades in the New York City restaurant scene, including her time working with Joe Bastianich, and what happens when your job consumes your life. Can any of you relate? Workhorse. My Sublime and Absurd Years in New York City's Restaurant Scene is a deep dive into coming of age and the chaos of New York City's foodie craze, and an all too relatable look at what happens when your job takes over your identity and when a scandal upends your understanding of where you work and what you do. After spending years making the impossible possible for someone else, Kim realized she had to do the same for herself. Again, the name of the new book is Workhorse, My Sublime and Absurd Years in New York City's Restaurant Scene. Kim Reed, a pleasure to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, it's so nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, it is a delight to have you here. So tell us about your local credentials.
My local credentials. What do you mean?
Well, you're from the region, right? You went to Siena.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, I'm a Siena grad. I graduated in 2000, and I went to high school at Shenandoah, went to junior high at Coda. So, yeah, I moved to Clifton Park when I was about 11. So, yeah, absolutely. And my family is still in Clifton Park, my mom, my dad, and my sister, and a lot of old friends.
Terrific. Well, we welcome you to the program, and I'm very happy that you are here. So give us a sense of what brought you to want to tell this story about your work in New York City.
You know, I just met some really interesting people and had some, you know, just some crazy experiences. The book really is a story of identity, you know, search for my identity, coming of age, and in some ways a search for love and real intimacy in relationships. And, you know, I had just gotten to a point where I was so burnt out from work, and I was really starting to wake up to the realization of just everything that I gave up to, you know, for my job, you know, for a job that probably, you know, like anyone's job, could have dropped you, you know, the next day and not really thought too much about it. So I had just gotten to a point where I was thinking about my priorities in life and what I wanted to do. And even though, you know, because of the burnout and probably what I would describe as a low-grade depression, I wasn't really able to just make a move. You know, it was a really slow, long process for me. So I kind of started small. I started with something. I just kind of wanted a creative outlet for myself, and I've always liked to write. So I started this blog where I was interviewing other executive assistants to, you know, really interesting high-profile people. And through that, I realized what I really wanted to write about was my story. And I really wanted to write about some of the people that I met and just, you know, how I, you know, kind of grew up in the industry and some of the realizations that I came to. So that's really how it started. I actually knew, you know, after working on the blog for a couple of months, I was in a coffee shop and I was, you know, sort of struggling to write what I would consider clickbait. You know, I was trying to figure out how to write editorial posts that would be interesting, you know, tips for assistants. And honestly, I'm just not that interested in those kind of pieces. So, you know, some people can do that. I couldn't even force myself to write those pieces. And, you know, out of frustration, I just stopped and I started writing about the first time I met some of the young partners of the Eataly franchise. And before I know it, I had been just writing straight for an hour about them. And I realized that I'm not writing blog posts. I'm actually writing chapters, and this is a book, and it's just a book about my story.
So that's
how it came about.
The subtitle is My Sublime and Absurd Years in New York City's Restaurant Scene. Was it sublime and then turned absurd, or was it always a balance of the two?
Oh, it was always a balance of the two. you know, restaurants are pretty crazy. There's a lot of glamour. There's a lot of excitement. But, you know, as we know, and as it's coming out in the press even more, you know, it's a very, you know, not unlike Hollywood, it can be a very, very, very tough industry. You know, for me, though, I had spent, before I went and worked full-time in the restaurant industry, I had worked part-time in you know, at Babbo for some time. So, and that was a absolute crazy restaurant to work in. You know, everything that I just described, there were moments where it was exhilarating, and then there were moments where it was just a very gritty, tough, you know, tough place to work. But while I was doing that, I had actually been practicing social work in New York City, which is a whole other level of tough to do. So I think that, you know, I loved practicing social work, but I do feel that I got burnt out from that as well, you know, day in and day out of direct client contact. And I worked with the geriatric population. So, you know, eventually my clients died. And to sort of see them through the end of their life was difficult. And then after doing that for eight hours a day and then running off to Babbo to hostess for the next 7 hours was, you know, you do that for years and it just becomes pretty difficult. So even though I knew that the restaurant industry was tough, I think that I actually felt at that time that it was going to be easier and a more gentle place than doing the, you know, the two job shuffle that I call it in the book. Of being a social worker by day and then being on a restaurant floor at night. Not sure that was always the case as it ended up. Some days were a little bit easier, but, you know, I ended up sort of getting into a whole, you know, it was still, you know, I ended up doing the same thing pretty much in the next 10 years, just in a different arena, a lot of excitement, a lot of exhilaration and some real toughness that, you know, did unfortunately lead to, you know, some isolation and as I said, some burnout and really, you know, kind of losing your own identity and getting very, very wrapped up and caught up in a demanding job.
It seems hard not to get wrapped up in it, though, that the whole, yeah. as I mentioned in the introduction, you're working famed restaurateur Joe Bastianich, and which just seems like it's a merry-go-round going at about 250 miles an hour, and once you're on it, you're just holding on.
That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, you're just holding on for dear life and trying not to get, you know, flung to the wall to the right or left of you.
Yep. No, pretty much. And listen, the company and Joe were doing some really interesting things in the industry at that time. I came on board about 6 months before we opened the Eataly Flatiron store. So I went from, you know, social work where I worked for a small agency. I worked with all, you know, primarily middle-aged women, and I was young women, and I didn't, you know, there was no outlet for dating in social work. There was no, I didn't have any real peers, you know, people my age, and didn't really get to hang out with the crew at Babbo that much because they worked such different hours than me. And I primarily answered the phones at Babbo on the reservation line, which is solitary. And you just worked so much, I didn't have much of an outlet. So for me to go from there to running Joe's office in the corporate office where there were people my age around, there were young men around. That's the part of the book where I introduce the young partners of Eataly, you know, young men who are around my age and, you know, lived a lifestyle, you know, traveling from Europe to the United States and, you know, speaking a second language. And, you know, they were just people that I, you know, kind of came to New York to meet. You know, they lived what I considered to be an exciting life and did things that, you know, I sort of dreamed about doing. So yeah, there was a lot of excitement. It was very difficult to not get wrapped up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
When did you start looking for the exit?
Oh, geez. I think years before I actually left, and I just kept getting sucked back in because again, there were so many interesting things going on. You know, Joe was involved in a lot of different television shows and, you know, these are all things that I really wanted to, you know, really wanted to be a part of, even to the extent where, you know, as a demanding as a boss as he could be sometimes it was me driving the, you know, oh, I'll be there for the shoot on a Saturday, or I don't need to hand this off to someone else. I want to do this. Because you really get addicted to being indispensable and being around, you know, interesting television shoots or meeting interesting people, you know, writers and television producers and such. But I think it started, it maybe started 3 years into the job, 3 or 4 years into it. I actually have some friends that I met in 2011 and 2012 in Europe when I was over there working. And one of them actually recently said to me, you know, you told me you wanted to get a different job, like the night we met. I'm like, really? I didn't, you know, you almost don't realize how far back it went. But again, because there were some unbelievable perks to the job, I found myself getting sucked back in. And I also think that when you really ignore your own needs and you're super focused on your job and you get wrapped up in your job, it's really easy to just get on that I mean, as you put it, like roller coaster. It's hard to really stop. And, you know, you get into this habit of always thinking about others and someone else and your job as being the most important thing, that, you know, the voice inside you that usually tells you to have a life of your own just gets so stamped down, you don't hear it anymore.
I think any of us, anyone who works in an office setting at certain times can turn to the other person and say, oh my God, what drama? There's so much drama. I mean, obviously you're writing a book, but man, there's a lot of drama.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, I think the restaurant industry can be a place for that. I mean, first of all, it's a place where, well, I mean, you have a lot of performers in the restaurant industry, but also it's, you know, the whole notion of the hospitality industry and restaurants is to put on a party for people every night, basically. And the people working on the restaurant floor, I mean, they're not really the ones experiencing the party, but, you know, they are in that kind of an environment. So I do think that sort of lends itself for, I guess you would, you know, an environment that's less professional than, say, you know, a corporate office where things tend to be a little bit more buttoned up. I think just the nature of the work, you know, kind of calls for it. I think I stated in the book, you know, I talk about how, you know, because I was so strapped for money and working two jobs when I was in social work, I thought frequently about maybe I should train to become a server at Babbo, because servers made in, you know, the mid-90s, and this was going back, you know, 20 years ago.
Right.
It was a lot of money. It was more than double, you know, what I made. My starting salary as a social worker with a master's degree in New York City was $35,000. And, you know, maybe I picked up an extra $7,000 at Babbo throughout the year. So I remember being really, really tempted by it. But I write a lot about this in chapter two. I didn't really want that sort of punishing life that a server has. I mean, you're on the floor all the time. It's difficult. And I talk about how, not all servers, but, you know, a lot of people in the industry, you know, their every night normal when they got out of work would be to go to another restaurant, go to a friend's restaurant. Right. And you end up drinking every night, and you really kind of get absorbed into that party lifestyle. And it's really the punishing nature of that work kind of screams for reward at the end of the night. And there's not a lot to do when you get out of work at 2 a.m, you know? So for the people who do, so I'm not bashing my coworkers who do live like that. I understand that. I just, you know, I'm actually thankful that I did have the insight and at least I had that much self-awareness at that time to know that if I took on that job, despite the money, I might've fallen into that lifestyle too.
Well, you tell some just amazing stories in here, and it's a hell of a book. It's Workhorse, My Sublime and Absurd Years in New York City's Restaurant Scene. Kim Reed, thanks very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.